You know, it's so easy when you get a sponsor for the show and you use their services. And I do. It's Karen Locker's Solutions for E-Commerce. Solutionsforecommerce.com/momentum will get you 10% off right now. I've been using her for, I guess it's been a year and change since I first interviewed her. Hired her pretty much right after the show because I'm like, I need everything you're talking about. I've got problems with stranded inventory. And guess what? I had lots of problems with stranded inventory last year as the restrictions were coming through. Boom, she'd fix it. If there's an issue with the photo, fixed. All that kind of stuff. I get refunds now. They just show up. Hey, you know, we're replying to your cases. Here's your refund. My feedback. I don't have to fix my own feedback anymore. It's automatically done. And I see the notes coming through. I still once in a while get an email from Amazon saying, hey, you have some stranded inventory. I send it to her. And most of the time, it's already been dealt with and fixed. But let me tell you, being a single operator, my wife and I, this just takes so much off our plates. I can't say enough about it. It's Solutions for E-Commerce, the number four, solutionsforecommerce.com/momentum to get 10% off her services. Be sure you tell her I sent you. Solutionsforecommerce.com.
Welcome to the E-Commerce Momentum Podcast, where we focus on the people, the products, and the process of e-commerce selling today. Here's your host, Stephen Peterson.
Welcome back to the E-Commerce Momentum Podcast. This is episode 190, Chris Lynn. Get ready for how to. Now, as Andy Slamon says, I pepper this guy with questions. And I do, because this is a process interview. Chris is probably one of the strongest process people I've ever talked with. He is all about breaking down touch points, breaking and organizing and reorganizing and recalculating. Wait till you hear how many times he's refined his process. Guess what? He is going to have incredible success because he's taken the fluff out. He has figured it out. He has tried it. He has tested. And there are so many lessons with this. If you're not doing this, and in a few upcoming episodes, I'm going to start talking about org charts and things that you ought to be doing to start thinking about, even as a one-person operation. Well, Chris is doing it and doing it so well. Let's get into the podcast. All right, welcome back to the E-Commerce Momentum Podcast. I am very, very excited about tonight's guest because I love his goals. I'm a goal-oriented guy. I just for whatever reason, I put a goal, I achieve it. It just makes it easier. Maybe it's the accountant in me. It's like a little tick mark, the steps to get there. I love all that stuff. And my guest is a goal-oriented person himself, so I can't wait to hear the story. Welcome, Chris Lynn. Welcome, Chris.
Thanks, Stephen, for having me.
And it's great to have you on because you are a goal-oriented individual. I mean, that is your thing, period. Right? Is that everything in life for you? Set a goal, and it's a stretch goal. It's not like an easy goal, and then you achieve it. Is that kind of how you work?
I used to set achievable goals, but now I like setting goals slightly above that because it's more challenging.
A stretch. I mean, you're not stretching a little bit. Your goal, let's drop the mic, is 10,000 SKUs live on eBay for sale. Correct.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. And how far are you into your goal?
So I'm going to cross over 1,700 today. So 17% of the way there.
17% of the way. Do you have a timeline for this goal?
And my activities I'm scheduling to try to increase 1,000 per month.
Okay.
So hopefully by the end of the year, but I'm sure there's going to be things that happen that I don't know.
Well, you're going to sell some stuff, let's hope, right?
Mm-hmm.
And you know, I'm assuming you calculated your sell-through rate, your projected sell-through rate. And so if you do, how many items will you have to put up to really end at 10,000?
Around 18,000.
Wow.
So it's going to be, and I'll need 6 employees, I believe, to get there.
6 full-time employees?
6 part-time.
Okay. Part-time. Mm-hmm. And that is to help listing and then at some point shipping, because once you start scaling at that level, you're shipping. The most I've ever gotten to was 5,000 SKUs. And my sell-through rate, it's a little misleading. So I bought a DVD store, for example, and I bought, you know, there's cases of Benji DVDs. I still have them for whatever reason. And so that's one SKU, and I probably have 100 of them, right? And so I bought a Hobbyster. That's a better example. And it was all the models, the car models and military models and stuff like that. So it was an enormous activity to get them all up, but they sell. And once they start to sell, you gain efficiencies. But I don't think the most, you know, maybe I ship 60, 70 items a week in my peak, even at 5,000 SKUs. So I don't know whether I had the right 5,000 SKUs. I ended up with SKUs because I would buy the whole store. Not quite the plan when you're a little more intentional. The way I understand it, you're a little more intentional about what you're buying, correct?
Sure. So I started with 30 categories because I don't really know what I want to sell. And that goes to the, you know, sort of, I don't want to get too ahead of the conversation, but when I reach 10,000 items, my goal is to maintain that 1/3 sell-through rate and then basically maintain my store and look for better items to sell faster or for higher dollar amounts once I reach that level. So as far as the categories, right now I am averaging between 12 to 15 items a day, sometimes more, but right in that range. So I'm a little bit slower than the 1% daily to hit that 1/3 sell-through rate to really get the right thing. But a lot of that is because of the same thing you're experiencing, which is in order for me to get this much inventory, I'm buying lots and doesn't always have exactly what you're looking for in it.
I love it. Oh my God, I can't wait to get into this because I think the fact that you're approaching it this way, there's no doubt in my mind you're going to have incredible success. And I think some people are going to learn. You know, one of the things that I see out there is a lot of people starting to look back to eBay because of challenges they've had on Amazon. And now some of them are having a little bit of challenges on Walmart. And that's just because it's new yet. Jed, I'm just not so certain. I think there's some barriers to entry there. So I'm seeing more people get back onto eBay or start talking about eBay. And it's with its own challenges. But I must admit, you were selling way back, so you have a frame of reference. It's materially changed. They've really made some real improvements for sellers. Would you agree with that?
Absolutely. And the main change is the mobile app. Hmm. And when I listed, you know, in 07, that's 10 years ago, I had to have a camera and a more complicated setup. And now the people who are helping me just use their cell phone.
It's incredible that you can literally pull up that listing. And what we do now is finish the listing on the mobile app. I don't know how your approach is. And we will get into specific because I bet you some people are probably confused about that. It'd be great to hear two large sellers' perspective on how they handle it. How did you get, why selling on eBay? What's attractive to selling on eBay for you?
Sure. So I got back into the game because I was actually reselling my old Pokemon stuff when Pokemon Go was exploding a few months ago. And
the opportunity again? Or what said, hey, today's the day I'm going to put up something on eBay?
I always thought that, or I always knew that collectible stuff was popular on eBay.
Okay.
And then when my friend initially got me into eBay, we had at one point 1,100 pairs of shoes on eBay, and they were all collectible Jordans. This was 10 years ago.
Oh, whoa.
And I did not know I guess I'll just start there. We had 1,100 pairs of basically limited edition sneakers. We were doing sort of high-end collectible RA, retail arbitrage. We were buying stuff at retail and selling it for twice retail because it was such a limited supply in New York City.
And so you knew how to hustle. You knew what to buy. You went out and bought them well in advance. The store would sell out, or you stood in line probably, right, with everybody else, got a couple pairs, and then...
So I actually did not know what to buy. My friend did. Ah. He was both the knowledge and the money. So he would sit at home, do the research. I would go out and get them or wait in line. He was just a bankroll and the what to buy.
Did you get half the profits?
He said it was exhausting watching me do 100% of the work. But yeah, half the profits was the deal.
Well, that's not bad. His knowledge and his money, and you had to do the work. That's not a bad deal.
No, it's a good deal. I wasn't complaining.
All right. I like your you got negotiation skills. That's good. Mm-hmm. All right. So you're doing that. And I mean, what did you learn in that? Because he had the knowledge. Did he transfer the knowledge to you? Do you feel like it?
He did, and when he actually, his visa expired, so he moved back to Hong Kong, and I didn't have the bankroll to hold items because they were all long tail. Uh-huh. I didn't have the capital to wait 3 to 9 months for something to sell, so I just got a regular job. I didn't get back into it again until actually a mutual friend of ours, Steve Rakin, I was watching his videos about thrifting. And so I'm new to the thrifting game, and it basically allowed me to do the same thing I did with sneakers 10 years ago with the capital that I have. Because I did not pursue sneakers because my friend had $100,000 liquid to do it.
And you knew what the cost was. So you
went right away. It was expensive.
And so you started using thrift stores, and you could start with $100. I mean, for $100, you could buy a lot of stuff in thrift stores, right? Especially if you do outlets or any of that kind of jazz where they're, you know, the big scale, the bins, I think they call them, right? Mm-hmm. What's your specialty? You know, you're approaching this and you're saying, hey, I'm going to try and scale it up. I got excited from watching some videos. I'm going to try and scale it. What did you think you were going to do, and what did you end up doing?
So I originally was buying everything that was cheap. Hmm. I was going to the thrift store and asking the managers, what do resellers buy? Okay. I'm new.
Well, that's smart.
And they would say, well, they buy, they go through all the clothing and they cherry pick. They look for things that are under 1 pound and, you know, that they can find at every thrift store. Instead of sort of needle in the haystack, the resellers that I see that regularly come have a specific niche. So I said, okay, I'll go ahead and try different categories. I've tried games, I've tried clothing. And then after the first month or so, I decided I want to sell like items.
Okay.
Because the sort of the genre switching takes a long time when you're listing. Hmm. If you move from a VCR to a t-shirt.
It does. Also, trying to learn them all, you know, because let's face it, even in t-shirts, there's a lot to know. I mean, there is. Mm-hmm. There's just a lot to know. And if you try to master that while trying to master the VCRs and master games or what have you, it'll take you forever. If you're able to focus on one thing and master it and, you know, exhaust the category, learn all the ins and outs, you get much, I think the narrowing down is such a smart move. So what did you decide on?
So for now, I've decided that half of the 10,000 items will be clothing.
Okay.
It's very abundant, and you can purchase it in lots, either close out, liquidation, you can do wholesale, you can go to places like Ross or Nordstrom Rack. You can go to garage sales. You can go to estate sales. It's the most abundant donated item, I think. So I've decided that half of it will be clothing. And hopefully I can reach the 5,000 in clothing by the beginning of the summer.
You know, there's a person, I haven't met her yet. I will. Who sells, I think it's $25 million on eBay in clothing in the Philadelphia market. Now, she's got a big staff. I mean, she's got a big staff, but she has processes that, to me, that's the art of the business, is really figuring out the process, right? Reducing the touch points, the number of steps it takes to do a listing. And it has gotten a lot easier, but it's still a lot of work. So are you approaching it? It sounds like you're doing some new merchandise. Are you doing specialized used merchandise, or are you just buying a big bin of t-shirts and you know, doing $2 t-shirts too? Are you being specific? That's a leading question. I'm sure it's a leading question. You're like, duh, sure. Of course.
I'm basically doing mixed lots so I can learn what I like. It's too early for me to really niche down. So I'm doing, you know, all kinds of different men's clothing minus swimwear. And then women's clothing I'm even experimenting with just because there's so much more of it. I'm trying to create a process of sorting, which I have not been able to do yet. Of all the processes I've seen, that's the most challenging one.
Well, walk me through it. So what you are approaching a thrift store, let's just use that version for now. You're sure. Tackling that. And are you doing all the buying yourself?
Currently, I'm doing all the buying.
Okay, so you're doing all the buying. And are you enjoying that still?
I love that part
okay.
of it.
All right, good.
Yeah, that's good. That part's great.
Okay, that's good. So you're doing that. You're not overwhelmed by it. And so you approach a thrift store. you're mm-hmm. immediately going to the clothing, because that sounds like it's your angle. You head to the men's clothing. Where do you start? Are you down on shoes? Are you into suits? Are you into jeans, shirts?
I'm going to give you my top secret strategy. Are you okay
all
with
right.
that?
I'm ready.
So
the first all right, nobody thing else I listen. I don't want anybody else to listen. Everybody else hold their mm-hmm. ears. Cover your ears. Go ahead. Just tell me, you and I.
So the first thing I do actually is I talk to a regular worker. So not the manager. I talk to the regular worker. I ask what they have that doesn't move quickly. So they'll say, oh, you know, we can't move luggage or blankets or whatever it is. So I'll go take a look at the whole store, including the stuff that I like, because I'm looking for long-term relationships with thrift stores, because that way I can spend less time thrifting and more time with relationships, because most thrift stores I've been to have too much stuff. So I'm trying to get a system going where I can go there and pick up stuff where they're saving things for me. So the first thing I do is talk to a regular worker. Then I go through and I try to buy some of the stuff they can't sell with my regular order to start that relationship. Then once I have paid for items with the receipt and the worker that now knows me, I have that person introduce me to the manager. And I like the referral. I don't like cold calling. I'm trying to learn how to do everything by referral. And that's my strategy.
Is it done at the same time, or you come back for that introduction?
Usually the same time.
Okay.
But I don't always go for the kill. I might go to the store 3-4 times before I ask the manager to hold something for me.
Okay. So let's talk about the conversation with the store manager. How's that go?
But the store manager says, hey, you know, I have an online store I resell.
Okay.
And I'm looking for specific categories like clothing or housewares. And I want to help you out. I know there's a lot of people trying to work a deal with you guys. So hopefully I can take some of the stuff you guys have trouble moving and some of the stuff that I'm looking for. And sometimes they're like, no, get out of here. But other times they're like, definitely. I hate glassware. Take all my glassware and I'll give you all the stuff you want.
And so what do you do? Are you taking and donating that other stuff that just doesn't? I mean, because if it doesn't move, there's a reason it doesn't move, generally.
I'm literally driving it to a different donation center.
Well, that's funny.
So that's funny. I just, if it's not going to move there, it's probably because they have too much in that area. That's why a lot of thrift stores will rotate inventory.
Okay. So what's that add to your cost? So let's just say, you know, you're buying 50 items that you know will sell, all right? Is that a normal mm-hmm. purchase, 50 items? That seems reasonable to me, right?
Yes.
Okay. And so you have to buy how many dead items to get the 50 to make it seem like you done a good
thing? I would say my average thrift store purchase is $200.
Okay.
And I have 50... For 50 items that are actually worth $10 or more.
Okay.
That's sort of my threshold. So if I check sold and I can net 10, I'll take a look at it. So 50 items that I can net 10 or more, but I'll probably get 50 to 100 items I don't even want at the same time.
Okay. So you're getting 150 items for that 200. So average price of a dollar and change. However, mm-hmm. the real cost is about $4.
That's right.
In theory, and the rest just gets mm-hmm. pitched. And at $4 mm-hmm. for a $10 sale, or is it a $10 return of investment?
I need this. If I do $20 plus shipping, it's pretty safe to say on net $10.
Okay, so you're doing net, which is very smart. And so, and you do plus shipping, which is, you know, I know there's free shipping, plus shipping, people in both camps. And I was a free shipping guy for a long time, but I went back to plus shipping because I can't control the rates, and they're definitely too many changes out there for me to control. And so you have that in mind. You're looking for $10. How long of a tail are the items you're generally buying? What's been your experience, and what did you think it would be?
So I would like it to be 60 days.
Right.
But then it varies. So I think it is right on the money. There's a lot of items that sell slower and a lot of items that sell faster. So I think 60 days is a good number.
So that's a good number for you. So if you hope to be able to return that $200 into, and it's 30% you're going to sell in 60 days, correct?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Oh, no, I'm sorry. No, it's okay. So that's, I'm looking for a 1/3 sell-through.
Right.
And I'm a little bit slower than that right now. So
in 60 days, 1/3 sell-through, or 30 days?
30 days.
Okay, so 30 days. So you're looking for that 1/3 of that 50 to sell in 30 days. So it's going to take you roughly 90 days to get all your money back.
Correct. And so that also gives me a 30-day window to get it online.
Okay. Oh, okay. Okay. So then maybe 90 days. Okay. Mm-hmm. All right. Yeah. So you've got some math to do there. And scale is an issue. So now I've seen some of the storage approach that you've been taking. You are a bin guy, and you have it stacked, and you have an inventory system. Now, I wonder if I should jump there yet. I think that's getting too far ahead. I don't want to go all the way there yet, because I think you're taking a very mental approach to this, and I think it's the smartest way you can do it, because you're talking about, you're building a system to handle 18,000 products that you're going to move through your business. Mm-hmm. Well, 18,000 will move through, 8 all the way out at the end.
Right.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And that is a big undertaking. And if you don't build the systems right from day one, you're going to be in trouble very, very quickly. All right, let's do this. Let's take a break. I wanted to take a breath and think about this question about inventory and the process that you're using. We'll be right back. You've heard me talk a lot about private label, and Andy Slammons is back with a new free course. It's the Smart Private Label course. S stands for selecting a product. M, manufacture with the right supplier. So important. Amazing photos, keyword research, and listing preparation is the A. R stands for ranking your product to the first page of search. We all know how critical that is. And then T is taking your product to the top of Amazon and beyond. This is a free course. It's going to help you get that foundation to do your own private label productness. You want to work smarter. Get it? Smarter. AmazingFreedom.com/smart. AmazingFreedom.com/smart. Tell Andy I sent you. Do you set audacious goals like Chris? Have you figured out where you want to be, what it's going to take, and are you really putting the steps in place to get there? I'm not sure if we all answer honestly how many of us could say we really are doing it. We want to believe we're doing it, but Chris is living proof it can be done. And again, that intentional. He is so intentional on what he's doing. He's willing to admit he's wrong, come back, refine it, reprocess, try it again. There's no doubt in my mind he'll get there. I can't imagine that he is not going to be successful. Let's get into the podcast. All right, we're back and we're talking with Chris Lynn, the 10K guy. Man, I can't wait to, I want to see that on a shirt or a hat or something like that when you hit that, because that's a really, really aggressive goal. I had hit 5,000, just under 5,000. I was up to 4,000. There's a story. I took a bunch down for a reason. I had a problem, but I'm going back. I'll be back at 4,400 probably in the next few weeks. I had to hire a VA, and he was listing 300 to 500 a week, and my son. So it was my son and I and the VA, 300 to 500 a week. Oh, and my wife was taking the pictures. That's right. So let me get them all in the picture. And we were scaling that much that for a period of time, and at some point it became unmanageable. It became like, whoa, we got to take a break because I can't handle it all. And then as the shipping goes, and I'm only part-time, so it got to be a challenge. You're smarter because you're building a process right from day one. So we went through your buying, and that's just buying at a thrift store, and I think that's a very sound process. I assume a Ross or a TJ Maxx or wherever else you're buying, you're paying their retail prices or discounted gift cards or however you're getting a better rate, plus you're tax exempt to buy things, and then you put it up. Are you still looking to get that $10 profit in a margin for their merchandise too?
Yes. Okay. And it's easier at a Ross or a Marshall's, but there's not usually 50 items.
Oh. Is it because there's you don't have the money to buy 50 items, or there just really isn't 50 items worth selling to get the $10 profit?
I haven't been able to consistently. I don't think I've ever found 50 items at one Ross or Marshall's with more than $10 profit.
So even a pack of socks, you know, thinking about TJ Maxx, which is a great place to buy a pack of socks. When there's a good deal and they're liquidating them or whatever, and you can see that there's a $10 and there's 50 of them, will you buy all 50 of them?
Absolutely.
Okay, so you're not afraid to hold a volume of inventory. The vending machine, I like to describe it as, where you put one listing up and it just keeps paying you back over time. But that is slowed down inventory, right? That does slow down your cash because it will take time.
It absolutely takes longer to do it that way, but it's less upfront time with the listing.
And if you bought it at the right price, at a liquidated price, do you mind tying up, you know, $3 in a pack of socks that you know that'll sell for $20 in the long run?
Definitely not.
Okay. Okay. And so in the other scenario, you might have to pay, you know, $6 or $8 a pack. But in this scenario, if you can buy them at a liquidated price. That's interesting to me that you can't find enough merchandise at a... See, I've never gone into one of those places thinking about it from an eBay point of view. I've seen it from an Amazon point of view, but I've never thought about it from an eBay point of view. I'll have to try that to see mentally if there are enough items. I mean, I have to take you at your word. You're the expert. Okay, so you approach those stores that way. Any other big source? Oh, yard sales. What's your thinking on yard sales?
My thinking on yard sales is to email before the garage sale opens, hopefully negotiating a deal for the entire lot.
Oh, so when you see an ad on Craigslist or in the newspaper, whatever it is, you will try to message that person and say, hey, I'm interested in buying your whole yard sale?
Yes, and twice I've been able to do that.
So the yard sale, and I don't do a lot of yard sales anymore, but the ones that I've been to, there are hundreds of items at a lot of them. Mm-hmm. And that doesn't scare you because, again, you know that you're going to be able to sell about a third. That was the math on the last version. Is that still about what you're expecting here?
It's identical. And literally, I will sort on the spot and then on the way home, donate the stuff I don't want.
No kidding. So you're sorting in the back. You're not sorting in front of the people.
I'm sorting in front of the people.
They don't know right, you're sorting. Right they just think you're stacking. Yeah, they just think you're stacking it in there and you're just careful the way you're packing it. But in essence, you're saying, I'll sell, or I'll research, whatever. Okay, garbage. Now, so you've solved their problem, right? Because they want to make their $150 or whatever most people make at a yard sale. You solved the time problem. They did not want to give that 6 hours of their life. And by doing that, has anyone ever called you back saying, hey, my friend is interested in selling their yard sale stuff too?
Yes, definitely.
Love it. So you got a model where you're going to a yard sale that never happens. Any real gems that you found in one that have made you even more excited than your third? Any real gems that you said, oh my God, I can't believe I got this for that price?
For sure. I mean, the first time I tried it, the lady called me and said, are you sure that you want to take everything? I said, yes. And she said, great. And what time can you be here? I'll help you load it in your car. I get my whole Saturday back. And so that night I found out that's the key. But in that lot, I received 60 or 70 of these longer burger baskets, which is like a
I've sold them before. I'm familiar. Mm-hmm.
Those did really well, and I bought the whole lot for $200. It had paintings. It had tons and tons of arts and crafts stuff, which sells very, very well. And so it was great learning a whole new category because now I'm interested in those kind of crafts, and it brought me to I learned about cookie jars. I learned about housewares. And it basically narrowed down. After selling all that lady's stuff, I just have a generic idea that stuff that has utility is worth more. Mm. So like stuff like baskets is kind of seasonal. But knives or cutting board, those kinds of things sell much easier because they actually have a use in the kitchen.
Now, are you only selling them on eBay? Have you done a Craigslist or an OfferUp or a Let It Go kind of thing?
Only for larger items.
Oh, okay. All right. So when you do get a larger item, you're willing to do that. Have you thought about a consignment shop for anything? Have you gotten anything that's really worth doing anything like that yet?
Not yet.
Okay. I know a storage unit guy I know was doing that. And he, very similar concept, right? He bought the whole thing and very little of it sellable. He would sell most of it on Craigslist or what have you. But then there are a few items that he would send to a consignment shop because there was enough value in them. I didn't know if you ran into that yet. Well, I love that other approach. So those are three pretty serious sourcing methods. Any other methods that you're using to gain volume? Because you, once again, you have a volume issue, right? You're building a process to handle it, but you still have to keep the funnel. I mean, and you have a big funnel to fill.
So I'm actually not having a big issue with finding items that are worth $10 or more in the used realm. My issue has definitely been listing. I actually think already I have 5,000 to 6,000 items that I've acquired in just 2 or 3 months.
That are sellable, that you think that, are that sellable, are, that meet those requirements.
That meet those requirements that That's are awesome. Already in, wow. in bins. So the... I think my previous sales experience has helped me negotiate really large lots. So, you know, and I just want to share one idea before I forget, which is when I went down to Amazon ASD and was talking to some other Amazon sellers about this, they were recommending possibly going through the inventory again and getting rid of items that don't sell for $30 or more. And really, you know, focusing on those items first, just so I can get more cash flow into the system and be able to funnel through this faster, which is an idea.
Is that something you're considering?
Yes, but again, there's so much. Even at $20, the profit margin is very good. So all of it is sort of a home run to me. Going back through it again is I think more time cost.
Well, because I think you're building a process, right? I mean. Mm-hmm. And I understand what they're saying. They're like, look, it takes just as much time to sell a $50 item as it does a $10 item, right? So mm-hmm. spend the time, you know, you got limited time right now, you're doing that. But you're hiring, you're training, right? You want scale. So you want people who can process and just volume move through. Because at some point you could run into a problem of supplying them inventory, right? I mean, I understand 5,000 items, but if you get the right process in place, you can... You know, you're talking about adding 1,500 items a month. Is that what you're thinking?
3,300.
3,300 a month. So that 5,000 is a month and a half worth of inventory when you're completely full.
Mm-hmm.
So, okay. All right. So I think their advice is sound. But again, I understand what you're saying. It's pausing to go back through it again right now when you got some momentum going. You don't want to pull back. So I get that too. So you got to do what's right for you. Okay, so you don't have a problem finding things. It's listing. So what are you doing to address that? What's your process now?
So right now, originally, I did not know how to hire a lister. So I put up an ad for someone to come observe me because I didn't even really know what I was doing. So I just said, come over for $40 for a couple of hours and just write down all the stuff that I do.
And this was in Craigslist or something?
This is on Craigslist.
Ooh.
And I said, I'm trying to create a position for a lister, but I don't know how. So the first thing, I need someone to observe me. And the lady came, and after maybe an hour, she's like, I can do this. Let's just figure it out. And then she was able to list, you know, 30 or 40 items.
Really?
Her first time from her phone. And the way that I do it is I'm sort of a fan of lean manufacturing.
Mm-hmm.
So I would rather go start to finish rather than batch for me.
Okay.
So we don't separate the processes. I list and take the photos and end with the item in a shipping ready poly mailer all in one line.
Okay. So you're actually putting them in a mailer, labeling the outside somehow from an inventory mm-hmm. point of view and putting that inventory comment somehow because you're putting them in a bin that mm-hmm. also is making it into the listing. Is that correct?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Are you using it in the words of the listing or in the there seems to be an inventory section where you can kind of list something. Which one are you using?
There's a custom SKU category in mm-hmm. the listing where you can enter in like a location or an item number. But I actually I do not use that because it's not available on mobile.
Oh, okay.
So I do two identifiers. One is the label that I use to keep track of my item is in one of the photos. And then also it's in the title.
Okay. And so, and that tells you a bin number and then a package number, I assume, because you're sealing these packages. And so your belief then is at the end, are they weighing the package too?
They are.
Okay. So all the information's on the outside of the package, I assume I can pick it up and it know, I know what it is. I'm assuming I'm right because the package matches. And then it tells me that it's 10 ounces and then boom, I just go.
And it's not sealed.
Oh, okay.
So I can double check. And then also that's built into the listing so that I don't have to pick and pack. All I have to do is put the label on it.
Okay. Okay. And so you, you're very accurate with your weights. So at the time when it says to ship, you're using eBay's shipping model and just selling it, whatever it says in the listing, you assume is right. And because you, you're doing that up front and, that's definitely different than what we do. So we use a similar form, right? So we have a form that we use, which has an inventory location. We use shelves, and our shelves are 4 foot by 2 foot. Bought them from a retail store. What was the name of that? Oh, my God. We bought seven of them, and it was all their shelving. And so it's a grid pattern. Put a took a marker down and gridded it out and did an A, B, C, D, E, F, G, right? And so we would put in, and we numbered the shelves. So they start at number one, right? And they go up to, I think we're a couple hundred right now. And so we would assign that a location. So it would be 1A, right? And so you know that's on shelf one in that first quad, or that first grid, right? And so we would be in there with eight other things. Very similar to Amazon, we don't care what it is. We just go for the first available spot. Right. It does, it's better not to put all shoes in one location because then it, you got to look through them all. When there's a pair of shoes next to a bottle of Coca-Cola, it stands out. Right. And so we've done it that way. And we put that actually in the listing itself. I have never used the custom SKU field because at that time I was using a program called InkFrog, which allowed me not to have people into our eBay account. That's how we use in the VA. And so we put that right into the listing. I've never messed with the custom field. And it's good to know that it doesn't work on mobile because sometimes I've taken my phone down an aisle to try to find a particular product. But so when an item sells, then we just pull up the listing and we look at it because we sell a lot of similar things. And it says it's 101A, for example, today an item. And so then it's just you go down and grab it. We just have a list of items to pull, put them on a cart and bring them out there. And so you've definitely taken it a step further pre-packing it. Are you using standard envelopes, standard boxes, or how's that working?
So I'm using usually a 9x12 poly mailer.
Okay.
And so the idea is to hand a pile of something to somebody and have it come back neatly in a poly mailer in a bin.
Do they have to do this at your home or at your business?
I'm trying to make it so they can't do it at my, and they have to do it at their home.
Okay, that's a beautiful thing. So you would drop off or make available to them, hey, here's 100 things, let me know when you're done.
That's okay. Right.
And you're not giving them a time requirement, they're using their equipment. So in theory, they could meet the, depending on your state, and I'm not giving tax advice, but an independent contractor, that definitely helps that. How do they get into your eBay account?
So right now I am logging into the mobile app on their phone. They're using the eBay actual mobile app.
Okay.
And so they do not know my password, but they are logged into my account. And they can't make any account changes because it'll require you to re-enter your password. But they could end listings.
Right. They could if they want to get through. And you would just change your password, you know, if you had to real quick, if you had a bad situation, right?
Right. They could cause some damage, but yeah. It's hopefully not catastrophic. And I would like to use a third party like InkFrog, but there isn't a third party mobile lister.
No, I agree with you. So here's the efficiency we got, but we still end up on the mobile app because the pictures on the mobile app and the editing of pictures on the mobile app is the time saver to me. So we would actually, we take it a little different approach. We would create the listings in batch form and literally put them on our inventory shelves. So similar to what you're doing, the only difference is we don't take and package them up just for storage and it's just easier to have them there. And so we would, you know, get the listing ready, do all the work, and play, just put them on our photography tables, ready to go. Then at some point, go take all the pictures and then put the inventory on the shelves. Boom, it's stored, right? And then you can go anywhere and finish the listing. It really doesn't matter. You just pull up the pictures, you know, or start the listing, pull up the listings because they're saved in a draft form. And then you just add the pictures to it, resize the pictures, launch, boom, resize it, boom. And so I've done that, take the phone home and do and finish the listings at home, sitting there watching TV or anything like that. And that's a reasonable way. So in theory, what you're describing, I love the idea that they bring you back a finished product in essence. I mean, you really do. And if you test a few and you feel comfortable with them, I think that you've improved the model. You've improved our model for sure by taking that next step. Who's going to handle your shipping?
Right now, I don't have an answer for that. It's going to be me until I find a solution. And the main reason why I haven't looking more into the shippers because I have shelving systems that stack 7 high with my current garage space, and it's dangerous for a seven stack, like something on the top bin would hurt somebody if it fell off. So it's scaring me right now to have somebody in that area right now. So I have not considered how to get out of the position of the person who's shipping.
So when you had said that you're selling sometimes 12 a day, how long does it take you to pull those 12 envelopes, have you found?
Less than 5 minutes.
All 12?
All 12.
Because you've done the work so well up front. And are you reviewing every item, or do you gain trust as Steve does more listings for you? You say, Steve's accurate.
It's much faster for me to fix a incorrect order than to review all of them.
Okay. So, okay. So you're letting it go out and potentially it could be wrong. And then you would just deal with the exception, right?
I'm assuming 3 to 5% are going to be wrong.
Okay. And so very little in the scheme of things. Okay. All right. And that seems reasonable. Because you're going to get 2% returns just because that's just the rule anyway, right? You know, it's just life. Okay, so it seems to me that you've really taken a big bottleneck out, which shipping is a hassle. That's one of the things that still isn't easy for people because it takes up a lot of space, as you're describing, right? You said 7 rows high? And you have how many items in those bins now, would you say?
Close to 6,000, but I only have 1,700 listed.
And bagged and ready and prepped, right? So you have 1,800 of them, though, about bagged and prepped, ready to go?
Yes.
And how big a space is that? I'm just trying to see what 10 times that space looks like. Do you have room for that?
Right now, the bins take up a 20 by 4 space.
20 by 4? Like 4
feet? 20 by 4 feet. Okay. 24 feet by 20 feet and about... 8 or 9 feet high.
Okay. And then you would have to have 4 feet on each side of it because you still have to be able to get around it, right? You couldn't put a row right next to the one. I guess you could do them back to back. You could do back to back, and then you'd pick
I would need 400 square feet with this current system to hit 10,000 items, which is not very much.
No, it's really not very much. And then you think you can process in that same smaller space because almost all the work is done. You're really just pulling the sticker off the edge or the, you know, if it's a poly mailer, and then slapping that label on, as you said.
Right. I can't process at all. If I'm trying to use this space, I will not be able to do any processing. I'll have to go from the thrift store. It's going to have to go into a bin, and then the bin is going to have to go out with the lister.
Right. And then you're bringing the finished product back in, get it stored. And are they assigning? That's a good question. When you give them the bin, is that bin now assigned a number that gets used in the listing? Is that the technique? Okay. And so a brand new bin, and as long as you're careful giving them out, you know where they're at. And then when it comes in, you gave me 100 items. I give you 100 items back in that bin. That say, you know, that have the bin number and something else that identifies them. Correct?
That's right.
Not the eBay number. Are they using the eBay number?
They're not.
Okay. So it's a custom SKU that you teach them the technique. Okay. And so that comes back. What's been your experience? Have you given any to anyone to do listing other, you know, you had this one person helping you there. Have you done any offsite yet with anyone?
I have two people right now with 250 things at their home.
Okay. And so you're waiting to see how long has it been?
I've received, so right now each person, the two people I have been doing this for a couple of weeks, they're averaging 1 to 200 items a week, start to finish.
Wow. That's impressive. I mean, 100 to 200 each. So if they gain to scale and they get to the 200 level, you could very quickly scale. I mean, you could be in a very scary place very quickly. I mean, it will not take you long to get through those several thousand items.
It will not. But again, one interesting thing is I have been targeting stay-at-home moms as my ideal lister. Mm-hmm. But stay-at-home moms, like, I mean, I know this is obvious, but it wasn't when I was creating the system. They work randomly throughout the week.
Yeah.
Because I'm trying to maintain the independent contractor status. What I'll find is they'll be listing sometimes at 2 in the morning, sometimes at 2 in the afternoon. That's very random when they're actually working. But they'll get it done if I have a bonus structure, which I didn't have when I first started.
Okay, well, let's talk about compensation. So right now, sure. You're the buyer. Mm-hmm. You then disperse to Steve, the lister. Mm-hmm. So what's your sales pitch to me? Hey, why would I want to come and work for you?
Sure. So right now I'm paying $2 per listing.
Wow.
And it's pretty comprehensive because they have to weigh the item and they have to package the item ready for shipping all in the whole process and photograph it. So they come to my place. I do a few with them. I observe them while they do a few listings. And then the first few items, I will double check every item and see how they're doing it. But my goal is for them to be able to do 6 to 10 per hour, because a $12 to $20 an hour job that's whenever you want is pretty decent.
That's a very decent job, yeah, absolutely.
And so I would like to create U.S. jobs if possible. I mean, VAs are much cheaper, but ideally I could just work with people in the U.S. It'd be better.
Oh, I agree. And you're creating businesses. These really aren't jobs because this is really their business. If they're independent contractors, it's their business. And for them to be able to make that, you know, hustle if they really want to and knock it back in 6 hours, right? You don't care because you're looking for the volume. Mm-hmm. Get these done to this standard, this minimum standard, nothing less. I don't care how long it takes you, in theory, right?
Mm-hmm.
So that's a good business. So you're giving them a pitch, $2 per item. And you gave me 250, so I'm thinking, all right, I can make $500. And if I can knock these out in a week, I mean, that's a pretty decent for staying home, right, and working at around my kid's schedule or whatever it is. Mm-hmm. What's the bonus? How does that work?
So the bonus I just added was I told them that if they can get to all 250 listings, I would pay $3 an item. And neither of them have been able to do that, but it's sped up their production because I think 250 is pretty challenging for a mom.
Yeah, for a week, right? And that's a 7-day week?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And at $3, so let's go back to your model. Your goal is to sell it for $20 plus shipping. And shipping is accurate because you're using...
calculated.
They're calculated. So you're getting back the cost of your supplies, in essence, by the discounts you receive, right? Because you do get some discounts for having selling, and so you're getting some benefit on shipping. Pay back your materials. You have to pay $3. Is the $3 included in the $10, or is that net after $3?
So currently I'm netting more than $10 an item.
Okay,
but and it's not really a significant cost of goods sold, but It's just a tool. I mean, I guess it would be significant at 3,000 items, but at that point, if they are cranking out that type of volume, then I'll have less employees and reach the same goal.
Right, right. And so you really don't care, right? I mean, it really doesn't matter to you because there is a point where managing that many people becomes, you're going to need help with that, right? Because you're now going to become a manager who's doing your buying, right? And so somewhere's going to have to handle that at some scale. Right now you can handle two people, but communicating with them probably gets hard, right? I'm sure there are mm-hmm. questions.
There are tons of questions. So
that process you're going to come up against too. So right now the bottleneck of you buying is not a bottleneck with two people. When do you think it's going to be a bottleneck for, and you're going to need help buying?
At five listers, I could, because operating at 200 a week, that's essentially 1,000 listings per week. And being able to supply 1,000 listings per week is actually still not very difficult, because there are liquidation sites and pallets, and there's unlimited things that make $10. Just most people need to make a higher margin if they're doing it themselves, in my opinion. So I think that most people pass on those pallets because it's only a $10 margin.
Yeah, but there is some point, I mean, you're going to have to go further out, right? I mean, you're hitting the thrift stores, and how far a range are you driving now?
Probably 40 miles.
Okay, so 40 miles. So you've got a route, and I'm sure you're cycling through that route. And maybe that's working at 400 to 600 or 800 in items a week. But once you start where they're listing 1,000, you're going to have stuff in the pipeline, right? So you're going to have to start doing more than that. And then, again, the communication has to happen. So I understand what you're saying, but at some point you are going to have to go out further. So it's going to be a little bit longer for you to get that 1,000 items, right? You have to go 60 miles or 80 miles just because you're basically cleaning out the market. And that assumes that nobody else decides to jump in and do the same thing, right? And you can't control that, right? Or a thrift store closing, which I've seen a lot of that happen in certain markets. And I understand what you're saying. You can go online and do liquidation or buy pallets of stuff. But you haven't experienced that yet to know whether that efficiency, you know, if you have to buy 500 items on a pallet, how many of them are sellable? Is it going to be your third? I don't know. Right? We don't know that yet.
I know for sure that it will not be the same week to week.
Yeah. Yeah. And you're just trying to get to an average. And I'm not criticizing your model in any way. I love the fact that you're thinking of these things and that you're staying ahead of it. You are further than anyone else that I know, other maybe than that $25 million seller in Philadelphia. I love it, and I love the approach you're taking. You're very methodical, you're testing it, and you're tweaking, right? Have you had to make many changes to the process based on experience?
I have a whole notebook of changes. It changes every day. It's like the, you know, I've become comfortable with change because it's literally very, very different. Even there has been 9 different ways I store the items in the bin.
And you're just figuring it out until you've come up with the one for today.
Right.
For today. I think, you know, the other thing I remember when we were in Vegas, you were talking to people about this stuff. So you're willing to learn and you're willing to take advice from others. I think that that's sound too, because these problems have all been dealt with by somebody. You just have to get into the right conversation to find out how they did it, right? And then you can come back and apply that to your business. Have you found any of those things where you've been able to just come back and say, aha, that was a barrier for me? And it was probably obvious just because you got so many things going on. It wasn't obvious to you, right? Have you found any of those?
The way I've been presenting it has definitely exposed errors. Like, for example, I was storing my items in the bin randomly at first, and then somebody reached out and said, you should store your items upright like a filing cabinet so you can easily file through them.
Right.
Thumb right through them. And then somebody said, you need to add a tag on the top of it so they're easy to read. And then somebody said, those are not easy to read. You need to make those letters bigger. So I made the letters bigger. And then people were saying, oh, instead of storing it in a clear poly mailer, you should store it directly in the shipping container because you can take out another step. So all of the ideas I have, I don't think any of them are original.
Okay. But I love the fact that you're reaching out and saying, hey, here's my process, and you're exposing yourself. You're saying, I have not figured it. And let me tell you, as a guy, it's hard to admit this, right? That we have not figured it all out. That's a very mature businessman in you to be able to do that and look at the benefit, right? What's your process take now versus what it was? You know, you probably can't even think about the way you used to do it. You're probably like, duh, why was I doing it that way? And now, but you did the steps to get you there. I love it. Oh, dude, you're so smart. Love it. So we're well on the path. We got two people hired. Goal getting to five. How quickly do you think you'll get to your five?
I think that probably in around fourth quarter. So I think it'll take another I didn't actually grow very much in March as I was hiring these people, but I think it'll pick up momentum as the more they list, the faster the store will grow. So I predict by the third quarter, at the end of the third quarter, I will already be at five listers. And at that point, I'll be focusing on figuring out how to do the shipper.
Yeah, the shipper and then the communication. How do you get to the place where, you know, then you have to be back at your place to be able to handle receiving all this stuff, right? To then get it up on the shelves to have it out for sale. How, all those logistics, you know, does that get more difficult with five people than it does with two, right? And those things. And have you thought that far out, or is that what your shipper would do?
My shipper is going to also have to be a customer service person.
Okay.
Because I know before I ship the item, I typically look it over, and sometimes there's a defect that wasn't in the listing, or the condition is not as described, or some kind of issue. Plus, there's going to be returns, so somebody's going to have to process that.
And then somebody has to either take it to the post office or get it ready for the post office to pick up. But there is a point where they don't like picking up 200 items at somebody's house, right? And getting them all scanned in and all that kind of jazz, that becomes a challenge. Have you had conversations with the post office?
My post office guy doesn't, I don't think he likes me, but I do give him a $25 gift card every month. So he's not...
He tolerates you.
He tolerates me because he has the scan form. So mm-hmm. He only has to scan one thing to scan all my items.
Okay. So that's a big tool. I don't know if a lot of people know that, where you can just scan one barcode and it says, hey, all those items are in this batch, and it automatically accepts all of them. Correct?
Right. And he didn't trust me at first to do that because some sellers will not have all the items in there and the post office guy will get in trouble. But over time, he's starting to let me use that form.
And that's a big tool because that all of a sudden speeds his work up. He gets the credit. You know, there was a postmaster in town, a small town next to me, and he said, next time, Steve, just make sure this zip code is on it. I need to get credit for the count, because that's how they get measured, is based on the volume of mail they hit. It kind of makes sense, right, for profitability purposes. They get measured by that productivity. And so I'm like, huh. And so your guy is probably the most productive guy on the routes. he might like you more and more. I don't know whether he gets compensated for that, but the postmaster gets measured for that for sure.
That's right.
All right. So it sounds to me like you've worked your way through the process. Where's the next challenge for you? The shipper we get, I mean, I see that. Where do you see your next challenge?
I see the next challenge just staying consistent in growing, because when I was first starting, it was extremely uncomfortable every week, because every week the business is bigger. But my biggest challenge is going to be not freaking out because the business is growing. Because the parts that you don't anticipate, like you don't think there's going to be more customer service and more questions and more returns and more phone calls. So it's just being able to maintain calmness, I think, and not letting something as simple as a return derailing into a 2-hour depression.
Well, yeah,
and just moving on.
And because you're going to get your scammers, you're going to get all that jazz. You can't control that. And so if you accept that and you build it around it, are you developing manuals for the new sellers coming on, like training systems and processes? Or is it really, hey, come and work with me and let you get it? Because there is a little bit of a learning curve, but generally it's really not very hard. You either get it or you don't.
So I have a Google Doc set up with the process of each category. So for jeans or shirts, it's a different listing process and a different checklist for quality control. So I've told my listers, and right now they're just listing clothing, mm-hmm. to improve the document because I want to improve their hourly. So I've told them, like, I'm not going to change your hourly. I'm sorry, I'm not going to change it per item, but if you can do two more items an hour, you just got a $4 an hour raise. So I know for sure the two listers I have now do not list the same way.
Oh, that's interesting.
Because they, you know, one has a bad back and has to position herself differently, and it's not the same for both of them. So I want them to do it as they as they want. As long as the process isn't broken, they can do it their way.
Yeah, and plus, quite frankly, it fits them, that's better, right? And for them, because you want them to be with you for a long period of time. Mm-hmm. What happens if somebody comes to you and said, hey, I used to sell on eBay. Are you interested in hiring somebody who used to sell on eBay? To
understand? Definitely not.
Okay. You don't want the bad habits, right? You want these things to your standard.
I like people who have sold on eBay, but for the most part, eBay changes so often. Hmm. In the 5 months I've been selling recently, there's been major changes. So I want somebody who's been adapting more.
Okay. And that makes sense. What percentage, I'm almost out of question because I just want to make sure I get in my head what the things that I don't want to leave thinking about something. You give me 250 items. What's the expected stuff that's just not going to be good enough to sell? Now, you've already done your first perusal of it. It passed your initial passing. What do you think is that you're anticipating that they're not going to be able to get listed because it's just going to tear that you missed or whatever?
I would say probably 1-2%, very low.
So very small. Okay. Mm-hmm. All right. Wow. Dude, I'm loving your processes. I think we've gotten how you've acquired it. We found your sources. You gave us the secret sauce that you have. Appreciate that. Nobody else heard it. It was just you and I. Mm-hmm. We went through your listing process. We went through your shipping model, which is definitely an improvement versus mine. The only thing I can add when you get out of clothing and you move into other merchandise is you'll have to have standard boxes. That's how we've been able to handle scale is, you know, most things fit in 2-3 different size boxes, almost nonstop. And so, you know, we'll pre-make a whole bunch of them, and, you know, and we have one of those machines, you push a button and the tape comes out, that kind of thing. And it just makes it easy, and having them sorted, boom, you just grab one off the shelf, you can blow right through it. So that's my little tip when you get out of clothing. But poly mailers are the way to do clothing. Are you putting them in a plastic bag and then a clear plastic bag, a poly mailer, or just the poly mailer?
I am currently doing both.
Oh, okay. So you are doing both. Okay.
But I think I will get into all of them. I think I might just eat the 3-4 cents every single one and double bag it.
Okay.
Because it's a more premium way to do business.
Yeah, it looks like you took the extra time. I do it for every book. I do it for every CD, no matter what. Just been doing it for years, and I've never gotten anything wet ever once. You know, all the years I've been selling. So I think that little bit of sense, that little bit of time and that little bit of money, it's a smart move. All right. So we know we're going to hit this by the end of this year. I'm going to have you come back on and give us an update. In the meantime, you're starting to sell a little bit on Amazon. When do you find the time to experiment over there?
I've just decided that I like work. So I'm just working all the time. I have had a lot of Amazon interest, and those sellers are helping me. And I'm most interested in private label.
Okay.
So where do I find the time? I guess just in between eBay stuff.
Okay, when you need a break from eBay stuff.
When I need a break.
Yeah, this is a way to clear your head, and it's something you're interested in. Dude, I love it. I love the process. I love the goal. I think it's a great stretch goal. But there's no doubt in my mind you're going to get it. There's no doubt in my mind. I'm really excited for you. I'm interested to find out when you hit that wall of buying. I'm really interested to hear that you pushed right past it or not. And that's not a failure. It's just a recognition of the market, right? And I love to have you back as soon as you hit the 10,000. Would you promise me you'd come back then?
Absolutely.
Oh, dude, that's awesome. All right, so the goal of the podcast is to help people move forward. So give me a tip or a trick that you think people could use in their eBay, Amazon, Jet, Walmart, anything, or maybe even in their life to move forward, past stuck.
Sure. So I am now using public accountability to really help me stay on track. There are, now that I'm in the space advertising, I'm trying to hit this 10,000 item goal, I am getting messages from people asking for an update. And I really don't want to be the guy that is not making progress. So I'm the public accountability is really helping me stay on course.
I love it. All right. So tell someone your stretch goal, not a goal, a stretch goal, and then be held accountable for it. I think that's great advice. Somebody has a follow-up question. Best way to get in touch with you?
Sure. I'm on Instagram at 10K on the Bay, and my YouTube channel is the same. And then my email is 10KOnTheBay@gmail.com.
And it's number 10.
Number 10K on the Bay, and it's a play on words. You can't technically use eBay in your name, but I'm kind of getting away with it with the Bay.
Instagram, okay, dude, it is awesome. I'm excited for you, man. I wish you nothing but success. Thank you so much. Take care.
Thanks for having me. Thank you.
Can you tell I get excited over processes? I just love that stuff because it's the sensible way to manage multiple things. That's how productive people get things done. I mean, they develop a process, they fine-tune it, they don't get stuck in it, they're always looking at it, and they're paying attention to others, and they're using that advice to figure out better ways to do things. Man, that's the whole key to it. ecommercemomentum.com, ecommercemomentum.com. Take care.
Thanks for listening to the E-Commerce Momentum Podcast. All the links mentioned today can be found at ecommercemomentum.com under this episode number. Please remember to subscribe and like us on iTunes.